Welcome to Divergent Paths with Dan Dunford. I am the host, Dan Dunford. I hope you spent your weekend doing something delightful. I hope you were able to see the last crazy 10 minutes of the Academy Awards last night, even if you're not into movies, because it was crazy. And, you know, crazy stuff is awesome. Sometimes. I don't know. Anyway, that's pretty random, considering my normal subject matter. So, this week's guest, much shorter than my episodes usually run. So, be prepared. A few weeks ago, I had a publicist for a young pianist contact me about sitting down with him, and so I did that this past Friday. Pianist Thomas Nickel, he performed today at Carnegie Hall. He gave the North American premiere of David Matthews' Piano Concerto Opus 111 with the Orchestra of the Swan. I don't usually get contacted by people asking to be interviewed this was part of it's kind of like, when actors or the like are on publicity tours, they will sit down for several hours and I had a dozen or so interviews with different places, different media outlets, radio, television, etc. And this is what Thomas was doing, and they asked me to be part of that, and I packed up my equipment and went down to the East Village to where they had their setup, and I sat down with him for a little bit. Of course, when you do that sort of thing, you just don't have as much time. So, of course, normally my interviews are 60 to 90 minutes. Yeah, sometimes they're a little shorter, sometimes they're a little longer. This was about 17 minutes. It's kind of like a mini version of what I usually do. Thomas is an interesting case because he grew up in New York and went to Manus Prep, where I currently work and have worked for the past, I don't know, 4 or 5 years, I guess. I know his teacher, so it was interesting to just happen to be contacted by someone that I've probably run into at some point. Obviously I can't remember all of the young people that I run into every year. I can't imagine. I mean, if you've been teaching at a school or working at a school for 20, 25 years, or in the case of some people at Manus, like 50 plus years, man, how you even remember anyone? Like, I can't even imagine how that's possible. Even people who are like deans and such, how do you even remember who they are after that many years? Anyway, point is, I sat down with Thomas for a short period of time and was able to talk to him a little bit about his music and how he feels about, you know, some labels that are put on him, labels such as Prodigy. But sweet, sweet kid, and of course an excellent pianist. So that's pretty much all I have to say about that. I hope you enjoy this short talk with Thomas. As always, if you have something to say or to me, you can always send me an email at divergentpathspod@gmail.com. Hit me up on Twitter or Instagram at @NYCBassBone. Most of the time on Twitter, I'm like tweeting about basketball. But hey, if you have a question, if you want to like yell at me about music stuff, I'm whatever. So that's that. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and or Stitcher, also available on Google Play. And support the podcast, head over to patreon.com/divergentpathspod if you have a few dollars that you can throw towards podcasty stuff. And yeah, that's it. Enjoy this mini pod with Thomas Nickel.
Yes.
How are you doing?
I'm good. Yeah.
All right. Well, get these levels fixed up. All right. So, you know, man, I'm not used to having this many people unless they're all talking. So let's, we're here because you're doing this concerto at Carnegie.
Yes, yeah.
Remind me, what day is that?
That's on this Sunday, actually.
Sunday, yeah. Like the day after tomorrow?
Yes.
But this will be great because this will go up the day after. Okay. That's super helpful, I know. Let's just talk a little bit about this piece. This is not a piece I'm familiar with.
It's
New York or U.S. premiere, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So let's just jump into that. Like let's talk a little bit about that piece, and then we'll kind of loop back into more about you personally. All
sure,
right.
Sure.
So what the piece is?
David Matthews Piano Concerto, Opus 111. And he composed it in 2012, actually, so it's had several performances around the UK, but I played the London premiere in July of last year, and so this is going to be the US premiere. And actually, I don't think much of his music has been played in the US, so I'm pretty excited, actually. And he's coming over for the performance, so it's an exciting experience.
So how did you settle on this piece? Do you have a personal relationship with the composer, or...?
I actually found out about the composer and the piece through the conductor that I worked with in England, who's the director of the Orchestra of the Swan. And as we were arranging performances with him, and we were talking about repertoire, and so he suggested this piece so that we could maybe play something kind of related to the environment, to England and all that. And they were also playing a piece by Benjamin Britten, and David Matthews actually was Britten's apprentice for a couple of years in the 60s, I think. So he had a pretty close relationship with Benjamin Britten.
Oh, Britten, that cheapskate. That cheapskate trick artist. Anyway, sorry. Yes, continue.
So they're playing Britten's Variations on the theme of Frank Bridge, and that's a piece for string orchestra, David Matthews' piece is also a piece for a piano and string orchestra, so it works fairly well logistically on the program.
Cool. Well, this is obviously what 4 years? Five, it's 2017, right? It's five. A piece that's 5 years old.
Yeah.
As classical musicians with classical training, we spend years and years and years of our lives playing pieces that are much, much older. Yeah. I'm assuming that you had the same experience in the time that you've spent
yes.
working on your solo repertoire. It's not like you don't get a 3-year-old masterwork when you're 12 years old, usually. Usually, I mean, I can only speak from the experience that I know, but generally, you work on your Chopin, your Rachmaninoff, your mm-hmm. Bach. Yeah. For years. And so, I mean, how do you find it's different working on a piece with a living composer that you've met, I'm assuming.
Yeah. Yeah.
That you've met and you've worked with, how do you find that different as opposed to working off of scores where,
you can't talk to the composer. You're only left with the notes on the page and, well, at this point, hundreds of other people's interpretations. I mean, there's no recording of Horowitz playing this piece.
That's true. So, I mean, I think whenever we work on a piece of music, and we always have questions about it, and we always have things that we wish we could ask the composer. So we, I mean, in place of that, we look to other people's interpretations and we try to find answers ourselves. But in the case of this concerto and other pieces that are composed by living composers, we have the great fortune of actually getting to talk to them, and any of those questions we have might be able to be answered. And so it's, I mean, it's an incredibly insightful thing. And when I got to meet him, we went to a friend of the a house that owned by people who were friends of the conductor, and just to run through the piece of music. And so I played through, and most of his comments were actually about dynamics. And I mean, that was an incredible thing, because that wasn't the first thing on my mind, actually, to be so specific about all the dynamics. I mean, I wanted to make it as accurate as I could, but that was something that was unique to me, I thought.
Unique in a good way?
In a good way, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Well, I mean, the thing is like, when you've got a dead composer, like, you can also do whatever the fuck you want, and you know, what's he going to do, like,
absolutely.
Nothing. You might get ripped by reviewers and purists.
Oh, that's true.
So you're from New York?
Yes.
From New York, Upper West Side? Or
Upper East Side.
Upper
actually,
East Side, yeah. Even better. So, you know, what kind of, you know, just because strictly from, like, what a rich, like, rich musical culture that's lived in the city for hundreds of years now. Yeah, growing up in that kind of a environment, how did you kind of, you know, how does your environment kind of shape you as you, you know, are a young person, you know, you have access to anything you want to see, like, literally anything. I mean, you can go wherever you want, see whatever you want, study with whoever you want. How does kind of where you're from shape how you, I mean, does it shape how you approach your, approach life as a musician, or, you know, is it kind of like separate, you don't even think about it?
Well, I mean, I think it does probably shape that, because it, in New York, it's not even just the amount of concerts that are happening in all the different venues around the city. It's all the street performers, too, and walking through Central Park, hearing all these different musicians. And I mean, in a way, that was something that I experienced more than going out to the concert hall, because my family, my parents aren't actually classical music aficionados. They're more country music and that sort of thing. So when I came along playing the piano and playing all these classical composers, it was a bit of a surprise to them, I guess. So, and it wasn't a standard thing for them to be going to the concert all that often. So, as I was growing up, I more experienced the musical culture of New York City through the, you know, more pedestrian performers and that sort of thing.
All right. So, other than just straight, I don't know. In when it comes to the thing, I mean, you just touched on it a little bit, but what other things besides just your classical repertoire do you kind of, whether intentionally or unintentionally, try to absorb into your playing? For instance, you know, when I'm playing, you know, there's no good music for trombone, so I basically play whatever I want, right? So when I'm playing a Bach aria, I'm not thinking of a particular classical singer, right? I prefer to think about I'm a big fan of Lana Del Rey. So I like her. I like how she phrases what her like, these like West Coast torch songs.
Yeah, my girlfriend, that's her favorite artist in the world.
Yeah.
So I'm actually,
she's a queen, you know, whatever. Yeah. But like, do you think about that? Like, maybe how a rapper like Nas phrases his fast phrases might affect how I do something in a string concerto. Do you think about things, you know, do you have artists that don't necessarily directly relate to what you do, but, you know, you can kind of grab from, whether it's a musician, I mean, architect, poet, whatever.
I mean, absolutely, yeah. And to your point about Lana Del Rey and more like contemporary non-classical performers like that, I mean, it's all related. I mean, it's and when I perform a piece by, I mean, Beethoven or Mozart or something like that, some established classical composer, I try to think about it more how it relates to the contemporary world, and how, I mean, the musical problems that they may have been facing in their lives and when they were composing the music, how those might relate to our world. And so in that sense, I'm kind of thinking about other contemporary music performers, besides classical contemporary composers and all that. And outside of music, I like all sorts of literature too. The books I read and all that, I think definitely plays a role in how I interpret the music and how I kind of think about the structure of the music too.
So who? Throw something out.
Oh, sure. Well, I mean, most recently, actually, there's a book I read by a Scottish author called, his name's Alistair Gray. Mm-hmm. It's a book called Lanark, which I'm actually finding is not so well known in the United States, which I was somewhat surprised by since it's such a famous book in the UK. But I came across it, and I was at first fascinated by the cover, because he does all his illustrations for the covers and all that, because he's a fantastic illustrator too and a painter. But the book has, I mean, it's so imaginative, and I think that the way that he constructed the book, because it's, I mean, it's a novel, but it draws from many different places other than his own imagination. I mean, all sorts of his historical writings and all sorts of different, I mean, music is one thing for sure. And I think just the way that non-musical artists create their work is certain similar to the way the musicians create their work too. It's all something that comes from within. It comes from our own imagination. So in that way, it's related.
Right. So how long you been doing the whole, what was it, how long you been doing the whole Child Prodigy thing?
Well, I mean,
well, I mean, why not? Let's do it.
I've been playing for the piano since I was five, but and I never really thought about it in those terms myself.
Of course, I mean, that'd be crazy. like why that would be? I mean, if you did, that would probably make you crazy narcissistic.
But I mean, people, I guess, started throwing around that term when I was, I mean, probably like 5 or 6 years ago or something like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. It's a very nice compliment, but I that sort of thing, you just, I mean, people will think whatever they want, but I mean, in the end, we're all still musicians. We're all still playing music.
I mean, sure. But like, I'm just kind of I don't know. Like, it's so easy, and it happens so often, like, so-and-so, like, this person is a genius, this person's a genius, this, you can hear that about, like, someone who has, like, done all this work in, you know, theoretical physics, or you can also hear that about someone who made a really funny meme. Yeah, you know, like, like a meme will be called genius on Twitter like 1,000 times, and it's just like, really? Come on. Like, genius? I don't know. Funny? Sure. Genius? I don't know. But, like, when it comes to, you know, developing as a young musician. I mean, I'm not like particularly older than you, but I'm just going to call you young anyway. But but like developing as a young musician, like, I don't know, is it just like one day you're like practicing your scales and your fingering patterns, and then the next day like the switch turns on, like the light switch goes on, and you're like, all of a sudden you're like, oh, I'm doing this thing with this people, and you know, like, how, like, where, how did that go, how did that work for you, like, how did you just go from, you know, obviously, like, you've got everyone, you know, people have their recitals and their this and that, yeah, and the other thing that they do, right? I get that, but like going from doing that to going to other places and playing with orchestras and like having people come to your shows and stuff, like, I mean, how did that work for you in your specific case, that is?
Well, I think music is different for everyone, and as a developing musician, the way that you internalize the music that you play is different for everyone too. And so, to that point, also, I mean, the way that you learn music is, I mean, I feel like I'm, yeah, reiterating myself over and over again, but that's different also. And in the classical music world and the world of, classical piano, whatever, the way that you are, that musicians are taught, I feel, is in some ways pretty uniform. And the way that you, I mean, the line of development, I mean, you play your Bach and you play your scales and all of that. And I think it's just, I don't know. I was so fortunate to get all these opportunities to play, but it's just, where you diverge from that, where you choose to start playing different repertoire, I mean, in some ways that's a part of what catches people's attention.
Doing Carnegie Hall on Sunday.
Yes.
It's a big deal. You know, I mean, it is. Especially, you know, premiering a piece. I mean, I would imagine it's like a bigger deal when you grow up in New York. I didn't. So, I mean, play there, it's fun. But it's not like the thing, right? You know, is that like, obviously you approach it just like any other concert.
Yeah,
ideally, you know, of course, yeah. Ideally, that goes without saying, right? But I mean, does it mean something more to you, just being like, you know, you grew up as a kid in New York, yeah, and yeah, you know, that's the place.
Exactly.
I mean, you grew up on the Upper East Side. That's, you could probably walk to Carnegie Hall, like,
yeah. Oh, it's true. I mean, I grew up going to concerts there, and I mean, you hear about it in the news and all that. I mean, you hear about all sorts of things happening at Carnegie Hall, and this is the place to be. But I do prepare for like any other concert too. I mean, and whenever I do perform, I think about it like I'm performing for a group of friends or something like that. I mean, it's just, I think of music as just, I mean, the most communal of things. I mean, everybody listens to music and loves music, but Carnegie Hall, like any venue, has its own audience. And I mean, people go for, I mean, the highest quality music to Carnegie Hall. So in that sense, I mean, people go expecting to hear a really great performance. So that is something that's on my mind too. So I want to make this, I mean, as good as I can.
The cool thing I found about playing there is, even if you're playing, and I'm not saying this is your situation at all, but even if you're playing with like a mediocre to bad group, it still sounds like 150% better, because it just sounds great in there.
Yeah,
like,
that's true.
Out of tune notes still sound pretty good, but that's just my personal experience. You know, I'm just fucking around. Anyway, well, I'm assuming you're looking forward to it, and yeah. I appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Of course.
And good luck.
Thank you so much. Thanks.